Welcome back to the Paula Gordon Show. I'm Paula Gordon, having a wonderful time with Frank Sulloway here at MIT in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Bill Russell is here, and we're talking about the importance of birth order with determining, I'm using that word carefully, who we are and how we are in the world. You're not saying that... I feel a little uneasy. Let's see. We used to do horoscopes. So if I walk in and shake your hand and say, what's your birth order? Am I supposed to know everything there is to know about you? And I think the answer is...
No, you don't.
No horoscope here.
Furthermore, even the influence of birth order, substantial as it is not, I think, properly describable as deterministic for the following reason. These are strategies that are adopted in childhood through learning. As I said earlier, there are no genes for being a firstborn or a laterborn. We come into the world and we learn to develop strategies that promote our ability to compete with other siblings for parental love and attention. And so laterborns adopt a very different set of strategies. Now, the key is they do it voluntarily. In other words, it's self-determinism rather than determinism. A laterborn could perfectly well decide, okay, I'm going to stop using low-power strategies like humor and wheedling and pleading, and I'll adopt firstborn high-power strategies. I'll walk right over and punch my elder sibling in the nose. And they quickly learn that's not a good thing. But they do have the choice of doing it, and occasionally they try them out. So we're experimenting a lot in childhood, and that makes the whole thing very much under the control of the individual. Secondly, there are a lot of things besides birth order that are important for personality. Gender is a wonderful example. Gender and birth order, in fact, are probably the two most important influences on personality. Now, let's take something like aggression. Everybody knows males are more aggressive than females.
It has to do with testosterone, doesn't it?
It has to do with testosterone. It's one of the largest gender differences. Males are physically much stronger than females, and they are just more aggressive. It doesn't really matter what's causing it. It's just we recognize that it's true. Mm-hmm. Now, if we want to know why someone's aggressive...
And we could test it, right?
It's a testable proposition. All good things are testable. If we want to know why someone's aggressive, we actually, even gender is an insufficient theory, because we also know firstborns are more aggressive than laterborns.
So male or female?
Yes, although with an interesting twist. If you look at women by birth order, you don't find a difference in physical aggression, but that's because women in general don't go around engaging in a lot of physical aggression. What you do find is a slightly... analogous difference, that is to say, firstborn women are more verbally aggressive than their younger siblings. Women use verbal means to get what they want. Males tend to use more physical means. So it's obviously just women are adapting in a gender-appropriate way the same basic strategy, which is use aggression to your advantage. So if we want to understand why people are both physically and verbally aggressive, we need to use both birth order and gender to do that. Now, we probably could throw in lots of other variables, like let's go around and measure everybody's testosterone level. There's probably a lot of variation going on there. Mm-hmm. Let's take children who have been abused by a parent. I'm sure the children who are abused by a parent are more angry and hostile than children who are raised in a very loving and caring environment.
And therefore learn different strategies for getting to through childhood?
Yes, and so things like conflict with a parent or being abused by a parent are particularly important for most basic personality characteristics. They affect birth order results, for example. My favorite finding from Born to Rebel involves firstborns who have an abusive relationship with a parent or a lot of conflict with a parent. You can't expect a firstborn to identify with parents in authority if that authority is always abusing them. Mm-hmm. So, in fact, firstborns who have a lot of conflict with a parent are really honorary laterborns psychologically.
Honorary laterborns.
Well, they are. The single largest category of exceptions to the rule that firstborns conform to authority and are conventional are firstborns who had a very conflicted relationship with a parent. That's an empirical issue we can go and test, and it is absolutely true. Conflict with parents is a great predictor of people being unconventional and open to new ideas, and it has even more influence on firstborns than it does on laterborns. Laterborns don't need Attila the Hun as a dad or the Wicked Witch of the West as a mother. They have an elder sibling. But firstborns need that hostility to switch over into the later born camp.
I'm concerned that people are going to inevitably do the reductionist thing and make this deterministic. What you're describing is a dynamic system. You are talking about a feedback system
that has emergent qualities
with many variables, which meets the early technical definitions of a complex system, a nonlinear system, which is intrinsically and by definition not deterministic.
And unpredictable.
And
yes.
My fear is, and I'm sure this has happened to you, that people read your book and say, it's one variable. Birth order determines everything. It is destiny. It is fate. It is who you are, and you can do nothing. And that's not what you're saying.
No, I mean, the most basic human intuition tells us that the story is more complex than that in any event. And also, we know from empirical studies that birth order determines general trends, just the way other variables, gender and conflict with parents, do, for example. It doesn't determine all the fine details of behavior, especially from moment to moment. Firstborns may be, on average, a little more conscientious and ambitious than younger siblings. But if we look at behavior on a day-by-day basis, I'm sure that on Thursdays and Saturdays, younger siblings are out there being very ambitious. This is a complex world in which we're talking about general trends, not the total absence of these qualities in individuals by birth order and gender.
And there are bigger trends within the trend that you point to. For instance, this knocks me out. The youngest son of a youngest son of a youngest son will have certain traits that are sort of amplified over time. I think I have that right. Benjamin Franklin is the youngest son of a youngest son of a youngest son to the fifth generation. This sounds like that song when we were kids about being the seventh son of the seventh son. Well, you say yes, don't you?
Yes, it turns out that because birth order has a modest influence on social attitudes, later borns are a little more liberal than their elder siblings. You get an accumulation of social liberalism that builds up if you happen to come from a lineage of exclusively of later borns. Now, Benjamin Franklin was, as I said, he was the youngest son of the youngest son for five generations, and each generation got a little more liberal than the previous one. So we know that Benjamin Franklin is going to be, relative to the rest of the population, quite liberal. He's likely to be in the 80th or 90th percentile on average. We can't know exactly where he will be, but he is not starting out at the median of the population. Mm-hmm. And that's just because he's coming from a long lineage of troublemakers.
Galileo. I thought that was a good story. Your book is full of stories, and you've gone back and created stories around all of these things, which to me says, no, it's not deterministic. It's what happens on Tuesdays and Saturdays, and how do people respond from these base places, isn't that?
My first and greatest love is biography, and I have enormous respect for the individuality of life and the contingencies of life and the peculiarities of lives. Every human being is different from others, and every life history is different. It astonishes me, actually, that there are any general trends at all. Mm-hmm. They are there, and they help to guide us as biographers. They help us to understand even the great patterns in Western history, but they do not end or get rid of the fact that history is the product of individuals who are infinitely diverse and complex.
I have a quick question. When I first came across your stuff is a technical term, I thought, well, what happens with shrinking family sizes all over the world? Are we going to simply, by virtue of this, become more and more and more, as a species, conservative, as we have fewer and fewer later borns? And if we end up with everybody, as is the Chinese policy, everybody's a firstborn, haven't we built real rigidity into our species by doing away with those guys who come later?
Well, we're not building rigidity into the species, but into the cultural manifestations of it. After all, if we went up again in family size, we'd gain back all those radicals. But it's true that as family size comes down, we lose only later borns from the population. Every family has a firstborn, and every family has, if they have more than one, they have a lastborn. So we're losing a lot of the middleborns from the population. And that will, on average, make societies a little more conservative. So it is has interesting implications for culture. Demographic trends do impact on the world today. We had, of course, a baby boom that went on in the 40s. Most of the baby boomers now are in their early 50s. They're beginning to have a lot of power in society. Now, most early baby boomers are firstborns. Mm-hmm. So we had a kind of conservative wave that swung through America that may indeed be linked to things like the rise of the religious right, a greater conventionalism in America, a return to Republican voting in the electorate. Mm. However, we have a later-born boomlet coming on behind them. When the firstborns are 60, their younger siblings will be in their 50s and assuming roles like the presidency of the United States and so forth. Uh-huh. So it has interesting implications for society as a whole. If I were a great revolutionary in Africa, I would want very large family sizes, they generally have. And then the minute we won the revolution to consolidate the gains, I'd pass out birth control devices. Bring family size down, and now you have everybody vain.
But isn't that ultimately maladaptive? I mean, if you're interested in the long flow of history.
Well, I'm, of course, kidding here. But,
yes, of course.
But,
I'm kidding.
But it's
interesting. You can begin to look at systems that way.
Yes. I would never pass out birth control devices in that I root for the underdogs, and I love the way people of risk and people who've been willing to challenge the status quo have been able to do so much in history to rectify a lot of wrongs. And so my heart's with the underdogs.
We're going to be back in just a moment with yet another closing thought from Frank Soloway. We're at MIT, Bill Russell and I. Frank Soloway is our guest, and we're going to be back in just a moment. Don't leave.